Well, a very good morning, everyone. We'll get to the actual title of our talk a little bit later on, because you may be thinking it's a bit of a strange title, is it? You know, I wasn't sure that anything was coming forth from the Pope about this subject, but as we shall see, it's hot off the press, as it were. But we'll begin by just sort of casting our mind back, if we can, to about 100, 150 years ago. Obviously, none of us were around at that time, but if you read sort of the works of Christadelphians, particularly some of the debates that went on with John Thomas, Robert Roberts, C.C. Walker, that sort of thing, you'll find that sort of a whole reams are written and recorded about debates about all sorts of different teachings from the Bible. Because to go back 100 years, 150 years, most people in this country believed in God, the Christian God, and a great majority of most of those people would have access to a Bible, and a good number of them would read the Bible as they went to their churches, chapels, etc. And they had a definite understanding, a definite belief about all sorts of different subjects, including this one about hell. They would quite happily tell you what they think it means and where they get their information from. It may be from the Bible. More often than not, it will be from the ministers of the church they particularly belong to. But they were definite. They had an understanding in their own minds, and they said, this is what it's all about. And that would be true, as I say, about most things concerning the Bible. Fast forward to our day, and the situation is quite different. You talk to a lot of people now who still perhaps go to church. I suspect don't read the Bible so often as people did years ago. And you start to quiz them about all sorts of different things contained in the Bible, or so they think it's contained in the Bible. Well, they're very unsure about things. They might be definite about one or two things, but most things, well, there's no real definitive answer from their lips about whatever the subject may be that you're talking about. Now, these, I know, are general comments, but again, you go back 100, 150 years ago, a lot of people would be positive in what they believe and also say, and this isn't right, you know, what you believe is not right, it's wrong. And then obviously you'd get down to the Bible, hopefully, and sort it out by looking at whatever the topic may be. Again, nowadays it's much more, well, this is what I feel, this is what I think, rather than an authoritative source, which is the Bible. So our subject is about hell, but what the Pope, was the Pope correct about hell? Again, we go back historically, and the idea of hell, hellfire and brimstone, it was a controlling belief, a controlling doctrine that the church leaders put upon people to bring them into fear and into subjection about if they didn't believe in God. And if they were wicked people, then they would end up in this place which is characterised by a fire that never goes out and all sorts of tortures and that sort of thing. So it was a controlling way that the clergy of past centuries had over the people who were their flock. Do as we say, do as we do, perhaps sometimes, and you won't end up in hell, hellfire, which is the abode of the devil. And again, as we start to think about it, it's not just hell. Well, what is hell? Who lives there? What's it all about? And like a lot of Bible teachings, it starts to mushroom out, as it were, to include other Bible teachings. And the problem is, once you make a mistake with one, then it becomes a lot more difficult to try to sort of show the truth, supposedly, of other ones which are affiliated with the first mistake, as it were. So for a lot of people today, when you start talking about hell, they will just sort of say, well, it's really being without God, isn't it? You know, also being separated from God. It may be some sort of eternal oblivion. And then you ask, well, what do you mean by eternal oblivion? And you have to sort of get out of them what they understand by it, rather than sort of going to the Bible. So then, why this particular title? Well, those who know me know that I'm quite an avid reader of one particular newspaper, which I won't sort of go into now. It's looked on by quite a lot of people as being a right-wing tabloid newspaper. But I just read it and find out some interesting things. I'm always aware that when you read things in the newspaper, you have to sort of take it perhaps with a bit of a pinch of salt. But this headline sort of struck me. It's from the Daily Mail of March the 5th, so it's what, a month old of this year. And the title is, "Neglect Elderly Parents and You Will Go to Hell, Says Pope." And that's what sort of drew me to it. Now, it's quite a forceful thing to say, isn't it? And there's a picture of the Pope there, sort of greeting worshippers, as it says yesterday, which I assume would be earlier at the beginning of March. So I read through the article, and I won't read through all of it now, but just one or two little highlights, because a lot of what the Pope actually says on this subject, I think, is very, very true. The way in which society, particularly the Western world, treats its elderly people. And we know it's a topic which is sort of right up to date because of what's happening in the National Health Service and in the care system, the way in which elderly people are treated. And there's not a day goes by without a story somewhere about the mistreatment of elderly people, because as we're so often being told, and perhaps rightly so, we are becoming an ageing population. What do we do with the elderly, particularly those who can't look after themselves? So just read a little bit from here. It says, "Children who fail to visit their frail elderly parents for months at a time will go to hell," the Pope said yesterday. He condemned a family who neglected to visit an old lady in a care home between Christmas and August and declared, "8 months without a visit from her children, this is a mortal sin." A mortal sin in Roman Catholic teaching is one so great that it rots the soul and will condemn the sinner to hell unless he or she repents. Pope Francis' warning to the young not to neglect the elderly was delivered in a general audience before 20,000 people in St. Peter's Square. There's a little bit more information there, and it says, "The Pope's message was addressed to a worldwide audience reaching beyond the Catholic faithful." So this isn't something that was done in a corner, just as an opinion offhand, as it were. Here was the Pope picking on this particular subject of the visiting of children to the elderly parents and saying, if you don't do that, you will end up going to hell. And that simply begs the question, what does that mean? Well, I think in sort of a civilised manner, we're actually bringing into the 21st century now the idea that was prevalent a century and a half, two, three, four centuries ago, about threatening people, if you like, making them fearful. Here's the Pope saying, particularly obviously to his own flock, the billion Catholics plus who live in the world, if you neglect your elderly parents, it'll be a mortal sin and you will end up going to hell. And there's all sorts of torments and things going on there in hell. Next day, same newspaper, there was a cartoon, and by all means, if you want to come and have a look at this afterwards, please do so. The cartoonist has picked upon this, and he has drawn the classic sort of hellfire picture. We've got sort of a very dark place here, with sort of lots of smoke and flames. We've got the devil himself with his horns standing at the entrance of a big thick wooden door. And we've got little demons or imps with pitchforks in there prodding people. Now this is obviously going back, you know, that nobody believes this, it would seem. Going back to the Middle Ages almost. And there's a chap there who's walked in and he's talking to somebody else there who's busily away stoking the fires. And the chap who's just walked in says, "The Pope warned me I'd end up here if I didn't visit my elderly parents. What did you do?" And he's talking to a man who's got dark black hair, slanted like that, with a little moustache, the swastika on his arm. And we can see, can't we? It wants it is comical, but we can see the point that the cartoonist is making. I don't visit elderly parents for 6 months at a time. I go to here. You're responsible, although never having actually done it personally, for the death of 6 million people in all sorts of horrific ways, and we're in the same place. In other words, the cartoonist is having, as it were, a pop, isn't he, at the Pope's saying, how can you possibly say the two are equated? And in one sense, you say, well, he's right, isn't he? But ironically, in another sense, he's absolutely spot on with saying that Hitler and this chap is in the same place. Because that's what the Bible tells us about what happens to us at the point of death if we haven't accepted the Lord Jesus Christ as our Saviour and been baptised into his saving name and believed in God, etc., etc. So that's what sort of made me think about this particular subject. This is something which is quite up to date, although perhaps not in the same way as it was 100 years ago. So I had a quick look on the one or two sort of websites about hell, and it's amazing the range of opinions that are on this subject. There are all sorts of opinions about it. I went on the Catholic one, and there it talked about hell is the way that it's been depicted here, but other sources, from Catholic sources, would say, well, it is really just being separated from God, whatever that might actually mean. I went on to the Baptist site, because they're the largest of the evangelical churches, and they've had quite a bit of debate about it, particularly in America. But they too come out with the idea that hell is a definite place that you go to if you are not a believer in God. Didn't actually sort of seek then to explain what they meant by that, but it's a place of consciousness, and therefore it begs the question, well, is it this place of consciousness where you are stoking the fires of life? What exactly does go on there then, if that's where you're going to end up, if you're not a believer in God? Because as I say, it's associated with the idea of believing in a personal devil, a being that exists. Well, where does that person reside, as it were? You know, God's in heaven, whatever we might understand by that. If the devil's in hell, well, where exactly is that? What does it look like? And it starts to sort of engender in us all manner of questions as to what we're thinking about. Now, as I say, today, it's not quite so easy to talk about this as it was this 100 years ago, when people had definite views about this subject. It's one of those subjects, again, like most of the Bible subjects, where you need to talk to people and say, well, what do you understand by this? What do you believe? What does it mean to you? Before we start to say, well, yes, you're halfway along to being right, or perhaps saying you're nowhere near being right, or perhaps you are very much in the right area. That's a challenge to us as Christadelphians, perhaps nowadays, more so than quite a few years ago. Another very interesting development, and I wasn't aware of this until I actually sort of looked into it, is that we had our reading from Acts chapter 2, the King James Authorised Version. I suspect the majority of us here have got that version. I suspect also there'll be others with the more modern versions. You may have an NIV, you may have a New King James, you may have an ESV. And as that was being read out, if you've got a more modern version, you'll have noticed the change of one or two words. So I just wanted a little bit of sort of information now. In the 1611 King James Version that I use, we find the word hell 31 times in the Old Testament. It's the word Sheol, which is a Hebrew word, and it means unseen state. You've got the word grave, exactly the same number of times in the Old Testament, 31, exactly the same word, Sheol. So we can make almost a one-to-one comparison. What exactly does Sheol mean? Well, it's hell, yes, but it's the grave. It's an unseen state. Well, therefore, it would seem logical to conclude that when it talks about hell, it does mean the grave, because it's an unseen state, isn't it? You only know a grave's there, obviously, if you visit a graveyard, or there's a headstone there. But otherwise, you've got no idea, as they've found out now in London, in one of the many building projects that are taking place, which again, has been in the news very recently, they found a mass grave of over 3,000 people, perhaps even more. It wasn't marked as such, they probably knew from old records, but you could have perhaps gone into the whatever it was above that and not realised you were standing over the graves of over 3,000 people. It's an unseen state. So it would seem a grave is a very apt description of it. You come into the New Testament, again in the King James Version, hell 10 times, it's the Greek word now Hades, the grave just the once with Hades. There's actually another word that is used with grave, but we'll come on to that in a moment. And you have the idea of hell fire in the New Testament 11 times. Sorry, in the Old Testament 11 times. Sorry, I'll rephrase that, into the New Testament. It's the word Gehenna. So the idea there that we've got in this cartoon, and that some people talk about now, can be found in the New Testament 11 times. Now, when you go into a more modern translation, You won't find the word hell at all in the Old Testament. It doesn't exist. It's been airbrushed out. That quite surprised me when I sort of looked at that. Every time in the Old Testament, we have the word hell in the King James Version, it's been translated with a different word, usually something like a death state or something of that nature, or the grave. Sometimes it's depths. Sometimes they do put the word Hades in. When we get to the New Testament, again, we've got the word Hades 8 times, and then we have the word Numenion, which is the grave in the New Testament, 8 times, and then we have Hellfire 4 times. So if you compare the two versions of the Bible, which I think is always useful to do, because remember, until the advent of these more modern translations, for hundreds of years, people were forming their beliefs on any given subject, ours being hell this morning, on that translation. The Authorised Version, which has got hell 31 times. It disappears quite a lot when you get to the Revised Version in the late 1800s, and when you get to, say, to the more modern version, not the NIV, it's completely irrelevant. It doesn't exist. That's quite a change, isn't it, if you think about it? So again, when you come back to those who believe in this subject of hell, whatever they might mean by it, there are not many places at all in the whole of the Bible they can go to. Well, they can't go anywhere in the Old Testament, because if they're not familiar with the Greek and the Hebrew, and I'm not familiar with it, this is just using a concordance, if they're just using NIV or an ESV or whatever, they wouldn't even thought about the idea of hell in the Old Testament, because it doesn't exist. Because the new translations have been more accurate, if you like, in translating the word into a word which is understandable by people, like grave. But it still leaves those one or two in the New Testament, doesn't it? Let's open our Bibles into our reading. Just spend a little time looking at this. Mine has the word hell in verse 27 and the word hell in verse 31, because it's an old Bible. If you've got a more modern translation, you won't have the word hell there. You may well have grave, you may well have Hades. It just depends which version you've got. Now again, if it's got Hades, that really doesn't tell you anything, does it? If you've never seen an old version of the Bible like mine, the Authorised Version, and you pick up a modern one, and you come across the word Hades, you think, what's that mean? Not an English word. You'd have to go off somewhere else and find out what it means. So even in one sense there, that modern translators have been a bit disingenuous by simply saying, well, we're not going to put grave, because if we put grave, then the word hell would just simply disappear overnight. You wouldn't have it. There wouldn't be any talk about hell as a fiery torment or a place of that nature. It would simply have just been taken away. And so those who believe in it have got nothing to hand their belief on any longer, have they? And that seems to be happening in a number of different areas within the scriptures as well. Another area, although not quite so prevalent, is the idea of Satan or the devil. More modern translations in some places have got rid of the word and put an English word which describes either Satan or devil in there. So then Acts chapter 2, just have a little look at this. This is Peter standing up on the day of Pentecost, when there are thousands of Jewish worshippers who have come from all over the Roman world to the feast of Pentecost, as we're told at the beginning of chapter 2. A miraculous thing takes place when these disciples are able to talk, to converse with the assembled multitude in their own particular language. We have a list from verse 9 to verse 11 of the different places of the Roman world that they came from. So this is a miracle that was taking place, that these disciples, not just the 11 that were left, remember Judas has gone off and committed suicide. This is taking place after the resurrection of Jesus. There are, we are told in the previous chapter, 120 disciples in Jerusalem. And I would suggest they're all there now preaching, Peter being the spokesman, as he so often was for the 12 disciples. And they're preaching now the gospel about the resurrection of the Lord Jesus Christ from the dead. Not the idea that he has died and gone straight to heaven as an immortal soul or immortal spirit. You see, this is all, again, as I've said earlier, all intertwined. When you start talking about hell, you've got to start talking about Satan, the devil. You've got to start talking about life after death, souls, whatever they might be. Because those who believe in the immortality of the soul have got to put that ever-living soul somewhere. And obviously if it's been good, it's going to go to heaven, they believe. But if it hasn't, where's it going to go? Well, it goes to hell. And we're back down to where we started. Well, is it the hell of the cartoon here, stoking up fires? And, you know, do people who neglect to go and see their parents end up in the same place as someone like Adolf Hitler? And by probing and asking people about these things, you start to see that they're not sure themselves really what they believe. They've perhaps been given a belief, been given a thought process, and that's what they cling on to without actually looking at it for themselves. So here's Peter then, here now in verse 22, saying, "Ye men of Israel, hear these words, Jesus of Nazareth, a man approved of God among you by miracles, wonders, signs, which God did by him in the midst of you, as ye yourselves also know." And even in that one verse, there's a completely different Bible topic, Bible doctrine thought about there. You see how Peter describes Jesus. Remember, Jesus has been raised from the dead. He is now immortal, but he still describes him as a man. Surely this would be the right time to suddenly tell people, and that man from Nazareth, the carpenter, isn't really just a man, he's actually God himself. He's gone back to be where he was beforehand. And so we're introducing now the idea of the Trinity that people believe in, which is not a Bible teaching. Perhaps the pre-existence of Jesus, who existed in some form before he came to earth, which again is not a biblical teaching. We just look at the words and they seem quite straightforward, don't we? We've spent 3.5 years with a man who we know was born in Bethlehem. And he was crucified and he's been raised from the dead, and we're going to tell you all about him, because he did, as most of you know, sorry, some of you will have seen, but a lot of you will have heard the stories about this man Jesus doing all these wonders and signs and miracles. Peter then goes on in verse 23, him being delivered by the determinate counsel and foreknowledge of God. In other words, it was all of the plan and purpose of God. You have taken him and by wicked hands have crucified and slain him. And God has raised him from the pains of death, because it was not possible that he should be holden of it. And again, we can ask the question, well, why wasn't it possible? Why was it inevitable that Jesus wasn't going to stay dead? And that's another Bible teaching that we would need to explore by just looking and thinking about the word. And then Peter goes on to say, in verse 25, for David speaketh concerning him. So what Peter does now is takes those who are listening to him, these thousands of people, back to one of the Psalms written in the Old Testament by probably the greatest king that ever reigned over Israel, and that was King David. And he takes them back to Psalm 16. We won't go back there, but that's where he's quoting these words from. So in the context of whether the Lord Jesus Christ has been raised from the dead or not is now the claim of these men. He says, and we know it's true because it was spoken of 1,000 years beforehand by the great King David, who in this Psalm 16, and now he quotes it in verse 25, David says, I foresaw the Lord always before my face, for he is on my right hand, that I should not be moved. Therefore did my heart rejoice, my tongue was glad, moreover also my flesh shall rest in hope, says David. In other words, when David is looking forward to the time when he's dead, what's he looking forward to? the fact that his flesh will rest in hope. Now, what does that mean? Well, it's talking about the resurrection from the dead. He's not talking about, moreover, I'm looking forward to the time when I die and I will go straight to heaven to be with God. Remember, Jesus wasn't even born at this time when David was alive. But then the psalm carries on in verse 27, because I will not leave my soul in hell, neither will thou suffer thine holy one to see corruption. Now, he's talking initially about himself, but as we'll see in a little bit, he's also talking about a descendant of his. But here's where we've got the word hell in my version, and those of the modern version haven't got the problem because it hasn't got hell there. It's probably, I think, got Hades. It may have the grave. As I say, if it's got Hades, it's still no further forward. What does that mean? If it's got the grave, well, that makes perfect sense, doesn't it? That's where Jesus was. He was in the unseen state. He was put into a tomb and a stone was rolled across. And if you didn't know it was a grave, you might be wondering, well, I wonder what's behind that big stone there. I suspect most people did know it was a grave of Joseph of Arimathea, but the body wasn't seen. It was in an unseen state. So to have the word grave there is very consistent with what we read in the Old Testament. Again, in the more modern translation, it's always grave or an unseen state or something of that nature. And it actually does away with the problem, doesn't it, of the fact that here David has spoken about being in hell. Well, hell's a place where all the wicked people go. But David wasn't a wicked person. He made lots of mistakes in his life, but he was a God-fearing man. He was a man after God's own heart. How did he end up in hell then? Well, we solve it by changing the word to grave. And that's where everybody ends up. So in one sense, we as Christians often have helped a great deal when talking to people about this by their use of these modern translations. And so we sort of turn our defence, as it were, onto attack and say, well, what do you believe about hell? Show me in the Bible. There aren't very many places they can go to. They definitely can't go to here because they've changed the word. But just to carry on, look at the few more verses. Verse 28, thou hast made known to me the ways of life. Thou shalt make me full of joy with thy countenance. Men and brethren, says Peter now, let me freely speak unto you of the patriarch David. He is both dead and buried, and his sepulchre, his grave, is with us unto this day. In other words, Peter is saying quite clearly, this great man David has been dead and buried for 1,000 years. Again, there is no hint in what he's saying here about David having gone to the place where all the good people are supposed to go. Because remember, we're looking at hell, but we can't separate it from the corollary of hell, which is heaven. This is the difficulty that those who believe in heaven go and get themselves into, by not taking the whole counsel of God, but not sort of, as it were, joining up the dots, not fitting all the bits of the jigsaw together. They end up with a doctrine here that is not compatible with that one, which is not compatible with that one, and so on and so forth. Individual jigsaw pieces just do not fit together to make the complete picture. Whereas Peter here is sort of, as it were, joining the dots or putting the bits of the puzzle together. Verse 30, he carries on. Therefore, he says, Peter, being a prophet, referring to David, and knowing that God has sworn with an oath to him that of the fruit of his loins, according to the flesh, he would raise up Christ to sit on his throne. And that's going all the way back to what we know as the promises to David, 2 Samuel 7. He's linking a psalm of David now with some words and narrative about words that were given to David from God himself through Nathan, a prophet who was living at the time of King David. So he's reminding his hearers here, Peter, that as a prophet, God gave to David some prophecies that were going to be fulfilled concerning him. That of the fruit of his loins, he would have a descendant according to the natural processes of things, according to the flesh, who would be this Christ, this Jesus of Nazareth, who would sit upon King David's throne. We could now go back into the Gospel of Luke, couldn't we? Look at words spoken there by the angel Gabriel to Mary. So, but Peter carries on. He, seeing this before, spake of the resurrection of Christ, that his soul was not left in hell, neither his flesh did see corruption. This Jesus hath God raised up, whereof we are all witnesses. Now again, modern translation hasn't got the problem of Jesus' soul being in hell. But don't forget, for quite a long period of time, those of the established Orthodox Church, the Anglican Church, the Catholic Church, did have this problem because the only Bible they had was this one I've got. But as more translations have come along, even those who believe in the immortality of the soul, or hell, have realised the incompatibility of their belief with this little section of Scripture. So they've translated the word hell with either possibly grave, which is consistent with where Jesus was, or perhaps they've put Hades in, which, as I say, is neither use nor ornament, unless you know what the word Hades means. So you've got to go back and look at a concordance and see what that actually says. And they'll come up with the idea of it being a grave. Now, I've got a handout here which I'm not going to hand out, but it's called an extract out of Josephus' discourse to the Greeks concerning Hades. And if anyone wants to take one afterwards, please do so. It's actually from one of the seminars that we as Christologists have done over many years, from the Gospel of Luke. And it just tells you a bit about the idea of Hades. And you can see from it where you get the belief that people have on this subject, particularly when you go to the rich man and Lazarus. One of the parables, one of the stories, as it were, that the Lord Jesus told. It's contained in Luke chapter 16, verse 23. So then, as time is going, we could look at Mark chapter 9 and Isaiah 66, but we won't do because of time, because we will still need to address the idea of this hellfire, this Gehenna, that is spoken of in the Bible. But that can be done perhaps at another time. I just wanted to look at this idea of hell as it's actually being presented nowadays by the Pope as sort of almost a threat, as I've said, to those who won't go and visit their children. We know from the Scriptures, particularly the more modern translations, that the whole idea is just really absent, particularly in the Old Testament. It is this idea of the unseen state, the grave where people go to. So people haven't got to worry about being tormented forever, being tortured or whatever. All they've got to worry about, if indeed they want to worry about it, is I'm going to go nowhere. I'm simply going to the grave, whatever that might mean, whether it's cremation, whether it's a burial, whether unfortunately it's something which happened to those poor people in that flight in France. They've got no grave as such. You probably couldn't find them, as has been said. It does really mean a complete and utter separation from God. No matter how good or bad you've been, if you haven't believed in God, believed his word, accepted his offer of salvation, then whether you are Adolf Hitler or the poor chap here who's not been to see his children, or to his parents for 6 months, you will all go to the same place. But it's not a place of fiery torment. It's just complete and utter unconsciousness, as we read in our hymn. So hopefully that little has been sort of a helpful looking at this, perhaps more so from the way in which we could look at it when we talk to people. We need to talk to them, as it were, on their terms, in the sense of, well, I'm using this Bible, great. I didn't go into the Old Testament at all, other than to prove that the Old Testament talks continually about people being in the grave, being dead. They've not gone to hell, this fiery torment. We would need to address it a bit more when we get into the New Testament, but at least we're sort of part way there to actually explain to them what the Bible does actually tell us about this place called hell.
Thank Gavin for his interesting talk this morning. By way of announcement, Next Sunday at 10 o'clock, the Bible talk is entitled Why It Matters, What We Believe, and the speaker on that occasion will be our own Brother Martin Bulletin. We're going now to take a short break for refreshments in the room at the rear of the hall, and I'd ask that you are back in your seats for 10 past 11 for the breaking of bread service. Would you kindly stand while we close in